Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Spells, Bells by Annabel Chase. Narrated by Emily Lawrence. Chapter 1. I stood on the wraparound front porch of my large Victorian house, sweeping away the dirt. I gave myself bonus points for moving the two Adirondack chairs instead of simply sweeping around them.
"What do you think you're doing?" Gareth asked.
"What does it look like?" I stopped sweeping and leaned against the broom. "Fiona doesn't come until tomorrow." Fiona was the owner of the fairy cleaning service, the Magic Touch. Gareth tried to wrest the broom from my hand, but since he was a ghost, he only managed to glide through the wooden handle.
"This is your brand new broom for flying, not sweeping," he said.
Although I'd managed to successfully complete the first phase of broom training and get my daytime license, I had no intention of using it. I examined the bright blue broom in my hand. Although I wanted one in Tiffany blue to match my wand, broomsticks didn't offer brooms in that color. "It does the job just fine," I said, and continued sweeping. "You know perfectly well I have no intention of flying on it. Ever." Despite the aid of an anti-anxiety potion, I had no desire to voluntarily ride a wooden stick hundreds of feet above the ground. Gareth rolled his eyes.
"I hope you never encounter a broomstick emergency."
"As far as I'm concerned, the only broomstick emergency will involve dust or cobwebs." I swept the remaining debris off the porch and into the garden below.
"Some witch you are," Gareth said.
I ignored his comment and retreated into the house. I needed to feed Gareth's cat, Magpie, before he chewed off his own leg. I wouldn't put it past him. "What's the best way to welcome a banshee into one's home? Do I need an offering of some kind? Maybe pig's blood?" If that was the case, I'd have to send my owl to the store pronto.
"A simple do come in will suffice," Gareth replied.
Town council member and resident banshee Maeve McCullen was due to arrive at any moment. I'd invited her to the house to discuss my ability to see the ghost of Gareth, my dead vampire roommate. It was apparently unusual in Spellbound for a witch to communicate with the dead. Since banshees have a strong connection to death, we thought Maeve would be a good person to confide in. The sound of wind chimes drifted through the kitchen, and I froze with Magpie's dish in my hand. The hairless cat meowed at me from his position on the counter. He wasn't about to let an agent of death come between him and his tuna. I set the dish on the floor and hurried to the door with Gareth hot on my heels.
"Do I look presentable?"
he asked. "You're dead," I reminded him. "You're basically transparent."
"No need to be harsh," he said.
I opened the door to greet Maeve.
"Gareth!"
she exclaimed, and leaned forward to literally air-kiss him.
"Death really suits you, darling."
"That's what they said when I first became a vampire," he replied.
"Every bit is true today,"
she said, fluffing her strawberry blonde ringlets. "Please come in," I said. As we began to walk toward the living room, Magpie shot out of nowhere and launched himself at Maeve's leg. He curled around her ankle and purred ferociously.
"Oh, you lovely creature!"
Maeve bent down and lifted him.
"Be careful,"
I warned. Maeve held the ghastly cat an inch from her face. I covered my eyes, fearful that he'd strike at any moment, using claws or those ridiculously sharp teeth of his.
"Oh, Magpie, your tongue is like sandpaper," she said with a tinkling laugh.
I peeked through my fingers to see Magpie licking her nose. "What the?" "He really likes you," I said. Maeve looked at me.
"You sound surprised."
"Other than Gareth, I didn't think he liked anyone."
"I told you," Gareth said smugly. "He's very particular."
Maeve placed the cat gently on the floor.
"Be kind to your new owner, feline. She's the one who keeps you reeking in tuna."
Magpie rubbed against her ankle, then hissed at me for good measure before trotting away. "Can I offer you a drink?" I asked. I have lemon fizz, or maybe something stronger, like a pomegranate pounder. She smiled.
Sounds like you're getting into the swing of things here.
Slowly, I said.
Why don't we sit in the living room where it's more comfortable?
Gareth said. It was odd for him to be able to act as host, since, typically, I was the only one who could see him.
I love what you've done in here,
Maeve said, spinning around to admire the newer paint and window dressings.
No offense, darling, but Emma's taste is much more my style.
None taken,
Gareth mumbled. Oh boy, now he'd sulk for the next 20 minutes. Didn't Maeve know better? I planted myself on the settee, and Maeve sat in the wingback chair adjacent to me.
So, you'd like to know more about this unique situation, is that right?
Maeve gestured to Gareth, who hovered by the oversized fireplace. Whatever you can tell me, I said. None of the witches in the coven can see ghosts. Is that a trait of my coven? Although we knew my coven was different, the details were scarce. Maeve crossed her legs and rested her hands on her knee.
I wish I could help, but I'm afraid my knowledge of covens is rather limited. I think you might be better off speaking to an older witch, one with more worldly experience.
Like Lady Weatherby? Lady J.R. Weatherby was the head of the Spellbound Coven, and the only witch I'd met so far that I was genuinely afraid of. Maeve swatted the air.
Oh no, darling. I mean an older witch, like Agnes.
Good thinking, Gareth said. I'd forgotten about her.
That's because she's been in the Spellbound care home for ages, Maeve said. She's a former head of the coven and very sharp. I'm sure she can offer you more insight than I can.
Thanks, I said. That's helpful. I wondered why no one in the coven had mentioned Agnes as a possible resource before. The mystery surrounding my origin was well known in Spellbound.
Word to the wise, though, Maeve said. You don't want to show up empty-handed. Sneak in a little contraband, like sweets and alcohol, and she'll be much more agreeable.
I made a mental note of her suggestion. If Agnes was as intimidating as Lady Weatherby, I was all for making her agreeable by whatever means necessary.
You, my good man, are another story, Maeve said, focusing on Gareth. I'd be happy to take you under my wing. I imagine you have many questions.
Gareth's relief was palpable.
Yes, I do. So many. Is it possible for me to make physical contact? I mean, I know I won't ever be in the flesh again, but can I at least move objects? I'd like to be able to slam a door once in a while, just to make a point.
He narrowed his eyes at me. Maeve twirled a strawberry blonde curl around her finger.
I can make a few recommendations. There are books on the subject.
She hesitated.
My primary recommendation, though, is to enlist the aid of one of the Grey Sisters. Any one of the three would make an excellent tutor.
Gareth made a choking noise.
You expect me to spend time alone with a Grey Sister?
Maeve shrugged.
You're already dead. What's the harm?
I looked from Maeve to Gareth. What's a Grey Sister?
Three sisters who live in the northeastern hills of Spellbound, Maeve explained. They rarely come into town.
They share one eye and one tooth between them,
Gareth said, shuddering.
They're often mistaken for witches, Maeve added, but they're more akin to goddesses.
Wrinkled, ugly goddesses,
Gareth complained.
Why couldn't I have Marcos as a tutor?
Marcos was the town minotaur and widely known for his impressive physical attributes. So you think one of these blind, toothless old women will agree to Yoda him? I asked. Maeve frowned.
What does Yoda mean?
It was bizarre to live in a world where a Yoda reference required explanation.
Never mind.
I'll speak to the Grey Sisters on your behalf, Maeve said. Do you have a preference?
Gareth groaned.
The one least likely to eat Emma.
Yes, that sounds reasonable to me. Maeve stood to go.
I'll be in touch, darling. Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Gareth attempted to slump against the fireplace and disappeared inside the wall.
No worries, his muffled voice said. I can't even do anything you would do.
Maeve was barely out of the house when Darcy Minor rode up the driveway on her magical bicycle. Darcy was the eldest of the youngest generation of Minors, one of the six harpies that lived next door.
Good, you're home, she said, striding up the walkway. I need to speak with you urgently.
Me? No one ever needed to speak with me urgently.
How can I help you, Darcy?
She stomped up the porch steps and adjusted her frilly blouse. In a pencil skirt with perfectly coiffed hair, she was the fanciest harpy in town.
Have you spoken to the Winged Wonder recently?
She demanded. I could only assume she meant Daniel. Not for a few days. Why? She crossed her arms.
He must be stopped. The angel is out of control.
My pulse quickened.
What do you mean?
Daniel Starr was a fallen angel with a long history of womanizing. Some stories claimed that he was the real reason for the town curse. He'd scorned an enchantress, who then cursed the entire town, a curse that prevented the supernatural residents from crossing the spellbound border. Daniel was, in fact, the reason I was here in the first place. He'd accidentally flown me across the boundary line, neither one of us aware of the fact that I was a witch. She threw up her hands.
Every time I turn around, he's trying to do good. It's becoming a real problem.
You're angry because Daniel is trying to be a positive force in Spellbound?
It's more than that. You know how I'm in charge of school fundraisers.
Well, I knew she was the self-appointed martyr of Spellbound.
Sure, I said. Daniel's trying to horn in on my turf, she huffed. He seems to think that turning over a new leaf means getting underfoot. Big mistake.
She lifted her shoe.
These heels will crush him.
They would indeed. They were at least 3 inches high and very spiky. I wasn't sure how she walked in them without keeling over. Must be magic. What's he doing? I knew his general plan was to stop moping and make a difference in our small world. He wanted to redeem himself for past transgressions. I didn't know the specifics regarding his reprehensible behavior. The Daniel I'd gotten to know since my arrival was very different from the one everyone in Spellbound seemed to know.
He's organizing the bake sale, she said,
near hysterics.
Everyone knows I'm in charge of the bake sale.
Beside me, Gareth rolled his eyes.
Her need for control is so over the top.
Says the vampire who criticizes the way I wear my socks, I said.
Either pull them up to your knees or don't wear knee socks at all, he said in exasperation.
Darcy squinted at me.
Are you talking to me?
No, sorry. I returned my attention to her. So why have you come to me with this? Talk to Daniel.
It's my understanding that the two of you have formed some weird and wonderful friendship. I was hoping you could have a word with him. Find some other way to satisfy his philanthropic needs.
Weird and wonderful. That was one way to describe our relationship. I'll see what I can do. Darcy's pinched expression relaxed slightly.
Thank you. I mean, some of the high school girls are ecstatic to have a hot angel hanging around, but most of us think it's creepy.
I saw her point. Do you need any help with the bake sale? I'm starting a magical baking class at the academy this week. I might be able to contribute.
And poison the whole high school?
Gareth scoffed.
Don't even consider it.
I'm not going to poison anyone, I said. Darcy's eyes widened.
I should hope not.
I heard Sedgwick shrieking before I actually saw him.
Duck!
I yelled at Darcy. We both crouched down at the same time to avoid getting knocked over by an owl. I didn't even realize you were out, I said. Sedgwick was my familiar, and we communicated telepathically.
I went out for a snack to my favorite place in the forest,
he explained.
You need to come quickly. Grab your broom.
Sedgwick, I said aloud, you know how I feel about riding on a broom.
It's an emergency, he shouted. Sophie's being arrested as we speak.
What?
Sophie was one of the remedial witches in my class, and a good friend.
Just come, Cedric insisted.
I'm sorry, Darcy. I promise I'll speak to Daniel, but I need to go. Do you need a ride on my bicycle? Darcy asked. No, thanks, I said. I'll take Sigmund. Sigmund was my beloved 1988 green Volvo that I thought was forever lost at the bottom of Swan Lake. Daniel recently surprised me by retrieving the car from the lake and having it re-engineered to run on magical energy instead of gasoline. It was the single sweetest thing anyone had ever done for me. Hold down the fort, I told Gareth, and rushed past Darcy to the car.
Follow my lead, Cedric said.
I drove Sigmund on the road until we reached the edge of the forest. I parked the car and continued to follow the spotted owl into the woods. I don't see anyone, I said, running along a well-worn path. Suddenly, I stopped running. What on earth? In front of me was a glass coffin on a raised platform. More importantly, it wasn't empty.
This is why Sophie was arrested, Sedgwick said.
I ignored the yellow caution tape around the coffin and went to look inside. A dwarf lay in the coffin, his eyes closed, and a bouquet of flowers in his hands. Is he dead? I asked.
No, it's the endless sleep spell.
Is that like a coma?
I don't know what a coma is.
I peered at the dwarf inside. Although I'd met a few dwarfs during my brief time in Spellbound, he wasn't one of them. How could anyone think Sophie is responsible for this? She's the sweetest, clumsiest witch in all of Spellbound.
You'll have to ask Sheriff Hugo. I only saw him leading her away.
Ugh, I didn't want to speak with Sheriff Hugo. I was on the Centaur's shortlist of most annoying residents. I managed to get under his hide early on and never left.
Hop in that rolling piece of metal you call transportation, Sedgwick said. You need to get to the sheriff's office before he does anything stupid.
If he'd already arrested Sophie, then it was too late. Chapter 2 Sheriff Hugo glanced up from the newspaper when I walked into his office, and I caught the flash of annoyance. To be fair, he didn't try to disguise it. Sheriff Hugo, I greeted him.
Miss Hart.
His gaze flickered to the corridor that presumably led to the holding cells.
I assume you're here about Miss Gale?
I am. I tempered my tone, not wanting to push the wrong button. You can't possibly believe that Sophie is responsible for the endless sleep spell. You know she's a remedial witch. He tossed down the paper he was reading.
And it's a complicated spell. Yes, Miss Hart. Despite your best efforts to make me look like one, I am not an idiot.
Unsurprisingly, he was mistaken. I never set out to make him look like an idiot. He managed to do that all by himself. What makes her your prime suspect? I asked.
She was found at the scene with a wand in her hand.
And? I prompted. There had to be more than that.
And she was alone.
I struggled to bite my tongue. When it came to police procedure, Spellbound rules were far more relaxed than those in the American human world. Has she said anything? I asked. He shrugged.
Says she didn't do it.
I strangled a scream. Can I see her? He narrowed his eyes.
Not if you intend to start trouble.
My hands flew to my hips before I could stop them. I intend to comfort my friend, who is probably very upset and scared. He grunted and motioned me forward.
Third cell on the right. 5 minutes.
I hurried down the corridor until I reached Sophie. There were no bars, like in human jails, only an invisible barrier between the corridor and the tiny room. Sophie stood at the invisible barrier, waiting. She clutched a tissue in her fist, the only sign that she'd been crying. I heard your voice. I so hoped I wasn't imagining it. I pressed my palms against the barrier. Tell me what happened. I was gathering berries for our magical baking class tomorrow, she explained. Last term,
Ginger had shared a recipe for burstberry muffins, and I wanted to recreate it. Ginger was one of the few red-headed members of the coven. Although she was young, she sometimes acted as a substitute for Professor Holmes or Lady Weatherby. "And you stumbled upon the coffin?" She sniffed and nodded. "At first, I didn't realize anyone was inside. I thought maybe a vampire was using it as outdoor living space. A vampire version of a cabin in the woods. Then I realized how short the length was, and I knew it couldn't be meant for a vampire." "Why did you draw your wand?" I asked. Sheriff Hugo said he'd found her holding her wand. "When I looked inside and saw the dwarf's face, I panicked. I pulled out my wand and jumped backward." Her chin lowered. "I managed to trip on a rock and fell on my butt. That's when the sheriff arrived." "Do you even know the dwarf?" I asked. "I know his name is Freddy. We've interacted on occasion, but no, I don't know him well."
"Did you tell the sheriff what you told me?"
"Of course." She wiped a stray tear from her cheek. "He didn't care. He said I was the only one on the scene, and he had to bring me in."
"Did you see anyone else while you were out there?" She shook her head.
"No, my owl was with me. But that's it."
"Did the sheriff say how he knew about the coffin?" I asked.
"No."
Sophie placed her palms against the invisible barrier, mirroring mine.
"Emma, I'm scared."
"Don't worry," I said. "I won't let him keep you here." I wasn't sure how I could secure her release, but not knowing how to do something wasn't a deterrent for me. Sophie was my friend, my sweet, innocent friend. I had no intention of letting her fall victim to the sheriff's lazy work ethic.
"My parents are on their way," Sophie said. "I'm sure they'll give the sheriff an earful, too."
I kissed the barrier and took a step back. "Stay strong. Let me see what I can do." There was a question nagging me. On my way out of the office, I decided to get it off my chest. "Sheriff?"
"No, I'm not going to release her. Even if you say please," he replied.
I smiled indulgently. "What were you doing in the forest?" He scowled.
"What do you mean?"
"Had someone alerted you to the coffin? What made you go there?"
"No,"
he said gruffly.
"I was taking my morning walk."
His morning walk? You walk in the woods every morning?
"On the mornings I don't have a tea time."
Sheriff Hugo was a regular on the golf course and in the local pubs. He had plenty of time for leisurely pursuits because he left the actual crime-solving to everyone else. "Do you do anything on these walks?" I asked. He arched a bushy eyebrow.
"Are you interrogating me, Miss Hart?"
I leaned back slightly. "Of course not. Just curious. I know other residents who find a walk in the woods to be good for the soul." Chief among them was Daniel.
"I usually don't see other townsfolk,"
the sheriff added.
"I was surprised as anyone to find a glass coffin."
"As surprised as Sophie, I imagine." I flashed a cheeky smile. His expression clouded over.
"You know the way out."
If I didn't, I had no doubt he'd be more than happy to show me. Ginger stood in front of the class, an array of mixing bowls in front of her.
"Today begins one of my favorite segments, magical baking."
Laurel rubbed her stomach eagerly.
"This was my favorite last term."
"Did anyone fail this section?" I asked in a hushed tone. Laurel shook her head.
"No, although Sophie came close. She overdid a few of the spells, and disaster was narrowly avoided."
Despite the pass rate, everyone had to repeat the section. A witch had to pass every class before she was permitted to graduate. If she failed any one of them, then all classes had to be repeated. Rules were strict at the Arabella St. Simon Academy. At the mention of Sophie, my expression soured. I couldn't bear to think of her rotting away in a holding cell when she didn't deserve to be there. As though summoned by magic, Sophie burst through the door of the classroom.
"Sophie!"
Laurel cried. The four of us ran to embrace her.
"I can't believe he let you out," I said, hugging her tightly.
Sophie grinned. Apparently, the coven objected on several grounds. Lady Weatherby was very persuasive. As a member of the town council and head of the coven, Lady Weatherby wielded tremendous power in Spellbound. That explains why she's not here today, I said. So are you off the hook completely? Sophie groaned. Of course not. Sheriff Hugo said he'd be looking into my statement. He warned me not to leave town. Oh, he's hilarious, Begonia said, rolling her eyes skyward. Lady Weatherby is still in the sheriff's office, Sophie said. She's trying to explain why she can't easily remove the enchantment. I'll bet the sheriff loves that it's complicated, I said. Sheriff Hugo wanted the easy answer to every problem. Black and white were his favorite colors. Ginger snapped her fingers. I know we're all thrilled to welcome Sophie back, but we need to stay on track. I don't want to be the one to tell Lady Weatherby that we fell behind her carefully set schedule. We took our seats and watched as Ginger tapped each bowl with her wand, filling them with a variety of ingredients. We'll start simple, Ginger began, since this is all new to Emma. Forget the magic part. Baking was new to me. I wasn't exactly an expert in the kitchen, a fact that Gareth found endlessly amusing. My grandmother had considered the kitchen her domain, and my grandfather and I were forbidden to enter without her explicit consent. Are we going to bake gingerbread surprise again? Millie asked. Usually we weren't permitted to speak in class unless spoken to, but Ginger's style was less formal than Lady Weatherby's, one of the reasons we all liked her. I thought I'd vary it this term, Ginger said. I don't want you girls getting bored. Do I smell honeysuckle? Begonia asked, sniffing the air. You do, Ginger said. Today we're going to learn how to bake a loaf of truth bread. Truth bread? I echoed. I thought we couldn't do spells that forced people to be truthful. I only knew because I'd asked Lady Weatherby about truth spells when I'd first arrived in Spellbound. Ginger wagged a finger. It's not that you can't do them, she explained. It's that you have to be careful how much weight you place on the result. The truth can always be manipulated. Truth bread is a straightforward spell, though, designed for simple questions, such as finding out which child spilled burstberry juice on your sofa. As an only child, no truth spells would have been needed in my house. I was the only one to blame. Does the sheriff ever use truth spells? I asked. Like, could he have Sophie eat the bread and ask her if her statement was truthful? The magical equivalent of a lie detector test. The town prefers not to use magic in that way, Ginger said. Because there are also spells that can make you lie, Millie interjected. What if someone had secretly used one of those? No one would know which version was the truth. Does truth bread always involve the same ingredients? I asked. Ginger shook her head. There are always substitutions available, but you must be very careful when you use them. If you measure wrong or use the wrong ingredient, it changes the spell completely, Millie added. Begonia giggled. Remember Sophie's energy muffins? Sophie buried her face in her hands. Don't remind me. She used the wrong ingredient, and it had the opposite effect, Laurel told me. Everyone who ate them fell asleep instead. They all began to laugh until the realization settled upon them. Sophie had used a sleeping spell once before. It wasn't an endless sleep curse, Begonia said quickly. Sophie paled. And it was an accident. Spells. Do you think the sheriff will use that as evidence against me? The room fell silent. Ginger forced a bright smile. There's no reason for anyone to mention it, is there? She waved Sophie forward. Come on then, Soph. You're my helper today. Hesitantly, Sophie stood and walked to the front of the room. Maybe this is a bad idea. Don't be ridiculous, Ginger assured her. You're one of us, Sophie Gale. We're not letting anyone send you to prison. I feel so awful for Freddy, Sophie admitted. Yet most of the time, I'm worried about myself. Shouldn't I be worried about him? I mean, he's the one in eternal slumber. A few tears escaped, and she dabbed them away with a handy tissue.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?